Edward G. Robinson, Joseph Kalea, Isabel Jewell, Leatrice Joy. The Gulf Screen Guild Theater. Your neighborhood good Gulf dealer and the Gulf Oil Companies welcome you to the Gulf Theater, the one place where you meet all your favorite stars. Don Ameche, Rosalind Russell, Jack Benny, Gene Arthur, Spencer Tracy. These are just a few of the Hollywood stars who will appear here in weeks to come. And tonight, the Gulf Theater presents Edward G. Robinson, Joseph Kalea, Isabel Jewell, Leatrice Joy, Oscar Bradley and the Gulf Orchestra, and the director of the Gulf Theater, your host, Roger Pryor.
Good evening, everyone. Once again, we've had to put out the SRO standing room only sign here in the Gulf Theater. And this Sunday, like every other Sunday at this time, there's an eager crowd of onlookers outside, waiting to catch a glimpse of their favorite stars. The stars in our audience, as well as those in the play. You see, this is the star's own theater. The greatest names in Hollywood. Even some who have never been on the air before appear here in the Gulf Theater because it's for a worthy cause. The money that would ordinarily go to our stars, Gulf gives instead to help meet the needs of the Motion Picture Relief Fund and to build a home for our less fortunate fellows in the picture industry. And because this is the star's own theater, the one place where you meet all the stars, it's only natural that it should be the place where you get acquainted with every conceivable type of drama. Comedies, adventure stories, plays with a message, and even the kind of story we're doing tonight. A horror play, Blind Alley, by James Warrick. Blind Alley's not too horrific, but we don't pull any punches in showing you what happens when a mild-mannered professor of psychology, played by Edward G. Robinson, pries into the cruel, criminal mind of a gangster, played by Joseph Kalea. Isabel Jewell plays the part of Maisie, the gangster's Mal, and Leatrice Joyce is the wife of the college professor. Now the Gulf Theater presents James Warrick's thrilling story of crime and punishment, Blind Alley.
I am William Anthony Shelby, professor of psychology at a Midwestern college. Shelby and I were sitting quietly at home one evening last June, talking over the end of another school term. The nurse, whom we have for our little boy, was upstairs putting him to bed. Shelby was saying,
I've definitely made up my mind, Will.
Oh, you have, eh?
Mm-hmm. This summer you're going to take a real vacation. You're going to forget classwork, lectures, and profound essays on what makes people tick.
Well, where do you want me to go? What do you want to do?
Now, don't start to psychoanalyze me, Will. All you'll ever prove is that I've been a neglected wife ever since last September. Now, I have an unsuppressed desire to know what it's like to have you all to myself for the next 3 months. Listen, Will, wasn't that the front door?
Yes, Mary, it does sound like it. I'll see who it is.
Just stay right where you are, mister.
What are you walking here?
Take it easy, lady.
What are you doing here?
Stand over there, mister. Take a look in the other room, Maisie.
Okay, Hal.
Pull them window shades, Buck.
Sure.
Now, look here. Who are you?
The name's Wilson. Hal Wilson.
Hal Wilson?
The notorious gunman?
Yes, they heard of you, Hal.
Nobody downstairs but these two, honey.
Okay.
Well, to what circumstances do we owe the honor of this visit?
Because the cops are right on my tail and I needed a hideout.
Just a little overnight visit. A guy named Nick is picking us up in a motorboat in the morning to take us across the lake. The dame's okay, honey.
Guy's clean, Hal.
Okay. Go back in the car, Buck. Pull it around the back of the house where it won't be seen.
Sure.
How many are living in this house, mister?
Well, just my wife here, my young son, and the nurse.
Where's the kid and the nurse?
Upstairs.
Go upstairs, Maisie, and tie him up.
Now, wait a minute. You can't go upstairs.
Shut up. Go upstairs, Maisie.
You won't hurt the baby, will you?
Oh, don't worry, lady. I got a kid brother myself.
Oh, you're not going to touch my baby.
You better take that dame along with you, Maisie, and tie it up.
Okay.
Oh, please.
Come on, sister. Get moving.
Please. Well, is all this necessary? You can see for yourself we're entirely helpless.
I can't afford to take chances, mister. And if I catch you at any funny business, I'll fix your soul. You won't get no second chance. Now that goes for you, the dame and the kid. It's up to you, buddy, so watch your step.
Looking back on that night, it seems unreal. Fantastic. We were at the mercy of a desperate, cold-blooded killer. I decided that the safety of my family depended on placating Wilson, disarming his suspicions by appealing to his vanity with seemingly innocent questions about himself. It was like being face to face with a cobra, not knowing what moment he would strike.
You ain't trying to get funny with me, are you? You're too nosy, just like the cops.
Well, the police are interested in your crimes, Wilson, but I'm a psychologist, and what I want to know about is something different.
Such as what, Professor?
Well, things like his boyhood, the dream
past. That's a lot of baloney.
Say, Professor, I had a dream the night before last, and
Now, listen, he ain't interested in what you dream. Now, look, Professor, tell me something, will you? Ever heard of anyone having a dream more than once? The same dream, I mean.
Yes, many people have recurring dreams.
What does it mean?
Well, usually a very deep-seated fixation.
What's a fixation?
Well, it's something that one did that left a deep effect on the subconscious mind. You see, Wilson, we all have two minds.
Yeah?
The conscious and subconscious. It's in dreams and instinctive feelings that the subconscious comes out.
So other people get some too, huh? You know, Professor, I've had a dream I've been dreaming ever since I was a kid.
Well, tell me about it.
Well, you see, it's... No, why talk about it?
Well, why not? Perhaps I can help you.
I don't trust you, mister.
You don't trust anyone, do you, Wilson?
Well, I never found anyone I could trust.
Oh, what about me?
Oh, no, I wasn't talking about you, me.
I ain't never run out on you, have I? No, and I never will.
Oh, you're a silly skirt, yeah, but you're kind of cute. Yeah, sure, honey, you're all right.
Oh, tell me about your father and mother, Wilson.
They both kicked off when I was a kid.
Who brought you up?
My aunt. And she was the meanest, no good, drunken...
Drunk? Well, did she beat you?
Yeah, when she was drinking. And she was always that way.
Well, didn't you have anyone you were fond of?
No. That is... No, nobody at all.
What about Tiny?
Shut up.
But you told me you liked her.
I'm telling you, keep your nose out of it.
She was your cousin, wasn't she?
Are you going to shut up?
Gee, Professor, I don't know why he always gets sore every time anybody mentions her.
Well, I guess you must have thought a lot of this, Tiny, didn't you, Wilson? Was she your aunt's daughter?
Yeah.
You grew up together?
Yeah, she always used to...
Well, go on. You were about to say that she used to...
Nuts. I wasn't going to say nothing.
But if you tell me about her, I may be...
Skip it. I said I don't want to talk about it.
The situation, already bad enough, was further complicated by the untimely arrival of Fred Landy as one of my students who came to bid me goodbye. Wilson forced me to admit Fred and then proceeded to taunt the boy over his helplessness. Fred, young and hot-headed, threw caution away and...
You think you're pretty tough, don't you? And smart, too.
You better keep that trap of yours shut, wise guy.
I suppose I don't like being told?
Now, don't be a fool, Fred. Do as Wilson says.
Let him shoot his mouth off, Professor. Look at him. Hey, scared stiff.
Sure, I'm scared. But don't kid yourself. It's not you I'm scared of.
Oh, no?
No. Just give the credit to that gun of yours. How brave would you be without it?
That's one thing you ain't... The one thing you ain't going to find out, sweetheart.
It's just what I thought.
Get over by the wall. Come on, move.
Wilson, what are you going to do?
I'm
going to
teach the scholars chump a lesson.
You're yellow, Wilson.
I've been wanting to take a crack at one of you rara saps for a long time.
Wilson, listen.
So you think I'm yellow, do you?
Sure you are.
Well, wise guy, this will teach you how yellow I am.
When Wilson shot and critically wounded a defenseless boy while I stood helplessly by and then refused to let me send for a doctor, I determined on a desperate chance to destroy the gangster by pitting the one weapon at my command, my knowledge of psychology, words against his grim guns. For the four long hours that followed, I plagued Wilson with questions and a ceaseless effort to gain his confidence and break down his mental defenses. In some measure, I succeeded because the next morning, the girl Maisie came down the stairs worried and angry.
What are you doing to hell anyway? When he got through talking to you last night, he was wringing wet and shaking like a leaf.
Well, I'm only trying to help Hal, Maisie.
Don't make me laugh. Why should you want to help him? I'm getting wise to you. Yeah, and Hal's getting wise to you, too.
Come on, sister. Downstairs.
All right, I'm coming.
What's the idea, Hal? What are you bringing the nurse down here for?
So she can take care of the door and the phone. You remember what you're supposed to say, sister?
Yes, sir.
What did you do with the missus and the kid?
Doctor and Mrs. Sherman.
Locked them in the front bedroom. But the window can be seen from the front. Say, you better scout around, honey, and see if we can find a safer place to put them.
Okay, Hal.
Huh? Well, Professor, how did you like spending the night in handcuffs?
Well, I didn't sleep much, Wilson.
Well, neither did I, so what even?
Well, what kept you awake?
Nothing you had to say, mister. You know, I got a hunch what you're trying to do. You're trying to get me all balled up so I won't know where I'm at.
Yes?
Yeah. You know, something tells me I ought to drill you right now. Only I don't. Why?
Because, you know, down deep, these things worry you, and you've got no one else to turn to but me.
Oh, yeah?
I know more about you than you think.
Hard
nuts. Yes, and I'll tell you something about yourself. You're suffering from paranoia.
Huh? What's that?
Well, we'll say, for instance, driving a car. Now, you can see the road, trees, automobiles, houses, well, just like anyone else. But then, sometimes you become aware of another thing. Something you can't see, but can feel.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Oh, yes, you do. It drives you into going faster and faster, and it follows.
No.
Now, you can't shake it off. You can't get rid of it. It's always just behind.
It's a lie. Who told you that? Who's been talking about me?
All right. It's a lie. But if it's a lie, why do you get excited about it? Now, sit down.
Why do you want to talk that way for? Don't get you no place with me.
No, perhaps not.
No. How did you know that about me?
It is always behind you, isn't it, Wilson?
Yeah, it is, Doc. It almost drives me nuts. And it kind of moves.
Moves. How?
I don't know. It's sort of like it would swing.
Ah. Well, that's the same impression you get from that pillar of stone in your dream, isn't it? As though it were high and swinging. As though it were always just about to crush you.
Yeah. You know, in the dream, it's like I was running like blazes. You know, I couldn't get away from it.
Well, have you ever had a feeling that is an almost instinctive sensation? There's something horrible, something in the shape of a girl or a woman who's about to spring on your shoulders from behind and above you.
Doc!
Now, have you?
Yeah.
Is it always a girl?
Yeah. Oh, I don't know. Say, Doc, can you? What's that noise?
You are jumpy. It's only your girlfriend, Maisie, coming down the stairs.
Oh. What do you want, Maisie?
The missus and the kid are safe. I found a big room in the attic. Hey, where's that nurse?
Huh?
The nurse, Hal. She's gone.
Gone?
Snap out of it, Hal. She's made a getaway.
Quick. Out the back way, kid. Get Buck. Don't shoot unless you have to. I'm going out the front as soon as I tie this guy up.
Okay, Hal.
Now listen to me, mister. If that nurse gets away, I'm going to get that kid of yours down here. Let him have it. Then your wife. Then you. Now get that great mind of yours working and figure out a way around that one.
Now, it's intermission time here in the Gulf Theater, and I know you'll all welcome this chance to relax after the tense, emotion-packed events of the past few minutes. While we're waiting for the Gulf Curtain to rise again, our own Doctor of Letters would like to turn your thoughts to a very important two-letter word. All right, Dr. John?
Thank you, Dr. Raj. Folks, all of us know certain individuals whom we refer to by using the word my. For instance, my doctor, my lawyer, or my druggist. Now, these people are usually our neighbors. We do business with them, and we have a real feeling of friendship toward them. We know that they have our best interests at heart. Well, in much the same way, most people who use Gulf gasolines or Gulf motor oils speak of the neighborhood good Gulf dealer as my dealer. Because when you stop at the sign of the Gulf orange disc, you feel at once that your good Gulf dealer wants to be helpful, that he wants to speed you on your way to a safe and carefree journey, even if it's only downtown and back again. He's glad to have you stop, and he wants you to be glad you did. That's why the service he gives you is not a matter of routine, but of friendly, personal interest. And that's why the products he sells are Gulf quality products, famous with thousands of motorists. And that's why it pays, in dollars and cents, as well as in satisfaction, to make the good Gulf dealer your dealer.
Now to the second act of tonight's Gulf Theater presentation of Blind Alley. Al Wilson, notorious gunman, played by Joseph Kalea, and his gun moll, played by Isabel Jewell, have made an overnight hideout of the home of Professor William Shelby, portrayed by Edward G. Robinson. The gangsters have left the house to find the family nurse who just escaped their guard. Meanwhile, they left Dr. Shelby tied to a banister.
Tied to the banister, waiting for Wilson and the others to return. In reality, they were back in a few minutes. Buck and Wilson had caught the nurse before she had been able to give the alarm. Moaning and sobbing, she was taken upstairs by Maisie. Wilson's hands were shaking as he unfastened the rope that bound my hand.
You know, Professor, I never had nothing like this happen before. And I'll take good care it never happens again, Mr.
Yes, but it will happen again. It must happen again and again, as long as that something follows you and drives you into going faster and faster till you can't think.
Nothing matters except that horrible thing swinging behind you. Always just behind you, swinging.
It's a lie! It's a liar!
Well? Why don't you say something?
You had to hit me, didn't you, Wilson?
You know why?
You're scared. You're like a man running down a blind alley in the dark.
Suppose I...
What are you going to do when you reach the end? A place where you can't go any farther.
I'm going to shoot and keep on shooting.
Oh, no, don't delude yourself.
What do you mean?
You're on the run now. You can't stop to think. You have to depend entirely on your instinctive reaction. Sooner or later, that's going to fail. And when it does, you're not going to wind up in any blaze of guns and glory. You're going to crack up.
Crack up? You mean I'll...
Quick, Wilson, the cop right behind you.
Wait! Say, what are you trying to do? Make it suck it out of me?
No, I'm merely trying to show you what I mean. Now, you had a mental picture of a cop in that window, and your reaction was automatic. You whirled around, gun in hand.
Sure I did.
But suppose there had really been a cop there. When you turned, ready to shoot, the cop suddenly became someone else.
Someone else?
Yes, Buck or Maisie or her Tiny, for instance. That would be a nice mess, wouldn't it? You pull your gun on a cop, and he suddenly turns into Tiny. You couldn't shoot him then. But in that split second, the cop could shoot you, and he would, Wilson.
Junk. How could a cop turn into Tiny?
Why did you beat that nurse so badly?
Because she ran out.
Oh, no, Wilson, that wasn't it. Now, who did you see when you looked at her and started to hit her?
What do you mean? I saw the nurse. I didn't see nobody but the nurse.
Hal, I'm getting worried about Nick.
Now, whom did you see, Wilson? Answer me.
You let Hal alone.
Answer me, Wilson. Whom did you see?
Don't answer him, Hal. Don't pay no attention to what he said.
Now, you beat the nurse because you looked like your cousin Tiny.
No, it's a lie. It's a lie.
I gotta stop pounding at him. Hal, honey, look at me. Don't listen to him. Don't listen to him.
Keep away from me. Let me alone.
Oh, but I want to help you, honey. Don't you see he's driving you nuts?
Keep quiet, Maisie, or I won't answer for the consequences.
You can't scare me, mister. Hal, you got to come away with me. Hal, what's the matter? What are you looking at me like that for?
So you come back, huh? You couldn't stay away.
Hal, what's the matter? It's me. It's Maisie.
You're Tiny, that's who you are. Tiny. Well, you dirty double
crossing little... Oh, stop. You don't know what you're saying.
I'll fix this so you won't come back no
more. Hal, don't. Please, Hal. It's me. It's Maisie. Put down that gun. Hal!
Wilson.
I'll give it to you,
Joe. Listen to me, Wilson. Listen to me, I say. I'm not going against you. I'm trying to help you. Now, put down that gun.
Hal, what was that shooting?
Pull yourself together, Wilson. You hear me? You understand what I'm saying?
Maisie. She's dead, Hal.
Huh? What?
What did you want to knock her off?
Knock her off? Knock who off?
Maisie.
Oh, her. Face. But she had it coming. But that's got nothing to do with you, Buck. Get back in the car and stay down when it comes here. Do you hear me?
Okay, Hal, okay. Nick ought to show any minute now.
She looks quiet, don't she? She was a nice kid. As good a kid as you'd hope to find. I don't know. I can't figure it. I can't figure nothing. Well, why don't you say something, Professor?
What are you standing there looking at me for?
You killed her for the same reason that you beat that nurse. What about that ring of yours? Who were you looking at when you shot Maisie?
Who was I looking at?
You were looking at Tiny. You thought Maisie was your dead cousin, Tiny.
No, lay off, Doc.
It was Tiny, wasn't it? She was your aunt's daughter. Did she look like your aunt?
Yeah. Spitting him at you.
What became of her later?
I didn't see her more.
Well, why? What made you keep away from her?
I ain't gonna tell
you. Well, why won't you tell me?
Because I ain't got to.
Now, how long was it until you saw her again?
I tell you, I didn't see her no more.
What did she look like after she was dead?
Like my aunt did after. I didn't say she died. She ain't dead. She ain't dead, tell you.
How did you kill her?
If you don't shut up, I'll kill you.
Now, put down that gun. Put it down, Wilson. Don't be a fool. You've killed lots of people since and been proud of it. Why should that particular one matter?
Because it does. Matters a lot.
You're ashamed of it, aren't you? You were always ashamed of it. You pushed it away from you and forgot it, didn't you? But I'll tell you how it was.
Don't you do it. Come on, listen. I didn't kill her. I did it, Doc!
Oh, yes, yes, you did. Now, I'm going to make you tell me. I'm going to drag it out of your subconscious and make you look at it. Don't you remember how it was?
No, I don't remember. I don't want to remember.
You used to beat Tiny often, didn't you?
How did you know that?
But she loved you anyway. You used to beat her up because she looked like your aunt, and you hated your aunt. When you beat her, you used to think about your aunt, didn't you?
It's a lie. Don't talk about it. It's a lie.
Yes, you used to dream about murdering your aunt, didn't you?
Don't I?
You dreamed about it until it was almost a fact. And then you tried to make it a fact by killing Tiny. Now, how did you kill her? Come on, now. How did you do it?
I don't know. I don't know. Leave me alone. No.
All right, then I'll tell you then. What about this dream of yours? You choked her, didn't you? You hit her on the head, and then you choked her to death. Didn't you? Didn't you?
All right. I remember, you're right. It ain't no good to lie to myself no more. I knocked her out. Then I strung her up by her neck to a beam. I let her swing there for an hour before I cut her down. But I didn't mean to do it. It just came over me suddenly, like, because she looked so much like my aunt. Then I dropped her down the old cistern back of the house. And after she was gone, I didn't care. But I couldn't get it out of my mind. The way she was swinging up there above me. So that's what I've been seeing all this time. It's Tiny. Tiny swinging and swinging. But it's Adria. Diamond, she's Adria.
Yes, Wilson, she is real. If there were anything you could do about it, anything I could do for you, but there isn't. You can never escape yourself, Wilson.
Why do you tell me all this? If it don't do no good.
But it does do good. For that reason, I've done it. You were a menace to society, Wilson. Now you're finished. You came in here last night to escape the law, but you had to stay and listen to me while I drew you a mental picture of yourself. And that picture of yourself as the unbalanced mess you really are, and not as the big shot you've always imagined yourself, has destroyed you just as surely as though I'd blown your brains out.
Why, you dirty double-crossing, you...
Go ahead, Wilson, try to kill me. Well, you can't even shoot now, can you? I've been telling you the truth, and you know it. I've been holding up a mirror of your life. Now, take a look in that mirror, Wilson. Maisie's a man, Tiny. Tiny, you look like your aunt whom you hated. Look, Wilson.
Yeah. I killed Tiny. She looked like my aunt and I hated her. No, I didn't. I loved Tiny. I loved her, I tell you. But it ain't got nothing to do with no one but me.
Yes, it has. No one has the right to go against the structure of society the way you have. Well, now you know what you've done and why. And you can never escape that knowledge. You're finished, Wilson.
No.
There's only one thing left for you to do.
Al, here's Nick with the boat. Come on, let's beat it.
You and Nick get going.
But ain't you coming with us?
Get out, you hear me? Get out! Get out!
Okay, Al. I'm going.
Oh. Why didn't you go, Wilson?
I guess you're right. There ain't no place to go. Here's my gun, Doc. Go on, take it. I got it coming. You won't?
No, Wilson, you have to do it yourself.
Myself? All right. I guess I can take it. So long, Doc.
Hello, operator. Let me have the police. Hello, this is Professor Shelby. Will you come out right away? A suicide case. Hal Wilson's dead. Miss Andrew, I'll be waiting.
Lord. You're like a murderer myself.
Thank you, Eddie, Isabel, Joe, and Leatrice. Thank you for a brilliant performance. You know, folks, up until now, Eddie Robinson has asked all the questions on this show. But now that the play is over, well, now it's my turn.
What do you mean, Rod?
Well, Eddie, it's now time for the Gulf Question Box, the time when I ask our stars questions about Hollywood. And you must answer correctly or pay a forfeit. But before we begin, tell me, Ed, how was your trip to New York?
Absolutely great, Rog. I spent a lot of time with my friends, and I really enjoyed every minute of my stay.
Even the blizzard and all that snow?
Oh, yes, even the snow. And boy, we had plenty.
So I heard. And I guess they've had all they're going to get. Winter's just about over.
Don't say that, Rog.
No, Johnny, why not?
Never bet on the weather, because just when you think winter's about over, zingo, you get snowed under. Winter may be almost over according to the calendar, but there are some mighty unfriendly days yet to come. And not only that, but every automobile owner knows that his car still feels the effect of the unusually bad weather that's passed. So tomorrow, give your car a special checkup at your neighborhood Good Gulf dealers. Change your oil to the correct seasonal grade of Gulf Pride motor oil. Get after those stiff, squeaky places in the chassis by getting Gulf Flex registered lubrication service. Because when you have your car Gulf Flex with the newly developed Gulf Flex lubricants, you know that it will ride easier and steer easier longer. After a hard winter like this especially, all cars, up north and down south too, need the protection of Gulf Flex lubrication service and of Gulf Pride motor oil. Be sure you drive in tomorrow where you see the sign of the Gulf orange disc at your neighborhood Good Gulf dealer.
Thank you, Johnny. And now for our Gulf question box. First question goes to Isabel Jewell, who's just completed a role in Irene for RKO. Now, Isabel, you better get it right or you're going to have to pay a forfeit. Tell me, what star made the following song a hit by singing it in a picture?
Okay. You don't get a forfeit from me. I know that. That's Good Ship Lollipop and Shirley Temple's The Girl.
Absolutely right, Isabel. Oh, you got it right. I had a 12 forfeit all fixed up for you. Well, our next question goes to Leatrice Joy. Leatrice, you come over here because you have to tell me what stars are associated with the following roles. Now, the first one is Dr. Kildare.
Oh, Luella.
Yes, that's right. Well, the next one is Alexander Graham Bell.
Donna Meade?
Uh-huh, that one. Now, this next one's a little tougher. Look out. Mr. Deeds.
Oh, Gary Cooper.
Oh, say. No, I think I got a couple of ringers in here this afternoon, Johnny. Incidentally, Donna Meade will be in the Gulf Theater here next Sunday. The thrilling story with Maureen O'Sullivan and Warren Williams. Now, the next question goes to Eddie Robinson, who will soon be seen in his greatest picture, Dr. Ehrlich's Magic Bullet, made by Warner Brothers. Eddie, name three pictures that deal with a specific period in the history of our country.
Let me see. Three of them. Abe Lincoln of Illinois.
Well, that's one, yes.
Union Pacific.
Two.
And,
Look out, now.
Well, I guess that's about all. I guess I'm...
Only two? Well, now,
yeah,
Eddie,
two.
What about...
Yeah,
you have to have three. What about Gone with the Wind?
Oh, God.
And the Gold Rush?
Yeah,
Virginia
yeah,
City? All lots more. Oh, wait, don't go away. You've got to pay a forfeit. Now,
what do you mean I have to pay a forfeit?
Oh, a forfeit? Well, they even have me doing a forfeit around here a couple of weeks ago.
Oh, you're pulling one of those things.
I've got to get one customer today anyway. Well, first of all, is it true, Eddie, that your secret ambition has always been to be a symphony conductor? That's true, isn't it?
No, you know my weakness, don't you? See, I've got enough batons home to have one of these orchestra of conductors.
Really? Well, that's a good thing, because for your forfeit, you have to go over to Oscar Bradley's podium, borrow his baton, and lead the orchestra in anything you want. Now, go ahead, anything at all is worth your
Eddie Robinson
as a symphony conductor.
Fourth, third, first symphony, anything you want. Now, every man for himself. One, two, three, four.
Come on, give out with your mouth, boys. Sing it now. Thank you, Eddie Robinson. And while we're still in the mood for questions, here's a stickler for you folks in the radio audience. Suppose you were an American in Paris without money, without a passport, pursued by secret police, and in love with a foreign spy. What would you do, huh? Well, Don Amici finds himself in that predicament next week when he appears here in the Gulf Theater with Maureen O'Sullivan and Warren Willem. So be sure to listen, won't you? And until then, this is Roger Pryor saying goodnight, everybody, for your neighborhood Good Gulf Dealer.
Joseph Kalea's latest picture for RKO is Full Confession, and Edward G. Robinson may be heard each Tuesday evening in his own radio series, Big Town, broadcast over this same network. The Gulf Theater originates at Earl Carroll's in Hollywood. This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.